Blog Talk Radio.
I got a basketball game. Oh, good evening and welcome to Erie House Oldie Tiny Radio, issue number 294, I believe, and 620 overall of Erie House Radio. Wow. It's Dale Cater.
I don't have that many fingers. Yeah.
Dale Cater from Spook Show, and I'm accompanied by...
Dave Bakley from Weird This Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're shooting again. And we're here with...
It is I, Gar the Ghoul. Bleh, bleh.
To you all.
Oh, come on. Say it with heart. Say
it
with heart.
It is I, Gar the Ghoul. Bleh, bleh to you all. And the Gabble Icarus. There you go. All right.
Yeah, that's the Gar we know and love. There we go.
More coffee. More coffee.
Tis summertime. The birds is singing and the bees is buzzing. And we are dealing with the latter, not the former. Because we got bee stories for you tonight.
We do.
Yes, we do.
And
oh
all
gosh.
Weekend long.
True. Yeah, we'll continue again tomorrow.
Does that mean we're truly buzzed this weekend, Dale?
I know not what of which you speak.
I know better than that.
Okay, so
okay.
Where were we? I forgot what we were just talking about. No, I'm kidding.
Sam Spade and the Queen Bee Caper. No?
Not connected, but coincidentally, not only do we have bee stories, but all three are like detective tales.
Are they?
Sure. We got Sam Spade, we got Gregory Hood, and we got Johnny Dollar.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'll agree to disagree to agree, and then disagree I disagree.
Action-packed expense account. Yeah. What he's doing playing with bees, you never know.
It's the Johnny guy.
Till the very end.
It's the Johnny guy.
Be or not to be, does it matter?
Yeah.
It is a matter for Johnny Dollar, and we'll tell you more about that when his show comes up. We also got
Dave and I had an interesting journey through getting a good file on these, but we finally did. Dave did. I just pointed it out, and Dave was like, oh, goodness. And he fixed it all
up. Yeah, by pointing out in the times that they were the worst, I was able to find some other renditions and got some pretty decent copies, yes.
Exactly. So we
Thank
can bring
you,
the best to you. That's right.
Gar, you're just improving the quality as we go, and we appreciate it. Bro.
Yeah, it has to be at least quality on the radio shows, if nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly it wouldn't be us three, but...
Woo!
We don't get paid for quality.
Good old Bob there in the chat.
Good old Bob. And that's about it for right now. Hello, good old Bob. Blah, blah to you. All right, there you go. Moving on. Ring that old bell. I don't even know where my bell is. There it is.
More cowbell.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, if you ask for that, too.
That sounds like a Liberty Bell.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Liberty Bell to me, that first one.
I know. That's kind of light in the trousers, Liberty Bell, but okay.
Whoa.
Oh,
whoa.
No. Now, okay.
Should
now,
have
check this out.
Bell. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you could be. Yeah, okay. In listening to, let's say, Sam Spade is a really good example. All right. See, these particular stories could not be brought to the light of day in 2022 at all. It's not going to work. Because we have... The value system has changed, sort of.
Well, society's changed. Let's leave it at that.
Society has changed. We'll put it to that. Which was entertaining in 1949 is no longer entertaining, even though I was laughing like crazy listening to this.
I love Sam Spade. I love Sam Spade.
Some of the things that he said in there, I was like, well, that's not going to fly.
Well, if you keep it in the context of when this
you
was produced.
You can't even keep it in the context. No. No.
Yeah, come on.
when we close tonight, Sam Spade, the last thing that he says to his secretary, I'm sorry, that's not going to float in any boat. Nope.
All right, we'll find out what Gar means as we move along. We might as well remove the mystery and start off with Sam Spade tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I thought we were going with Johnny McDollar. No? Okay. Either way.
No, we're going with, you created such a mystery that we have to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, you've piqued our collective interests.
Okay. Well, this Sam Spade is absolutely hilarious. And I love the scriptwriters and the actors. They pulled it off so great. I was giggling out there walking around doing yard work today, listening to this thing in my head. Which, you know, the neighbors know that guy's off anyway, but that's okay.
Well, you know, that means the neighbors leave you alone when they think that, you know?
We were talking about, a friend of mine and I were talking about it. We found a house and it had a treehouse in the back. And we were pointing things out, and I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to be getting up in that treehouse blowing bubbles in the afternoon. And he said, no one's ever going to visit you. And I was like, well, you know, that's why you blow bubbles in the afternoon. Just picture Gar up in a treehouse blowing bubbles, sitting there, you know, talking to himself probably.
I do have bad dreams that are quite similar to that, which you just
described. If you're having dreams about me, you need to go see somebody else. I don't know. Don't know where to go with that.
Oh, I do, but I can't.
I know you can't. Yes, yes.
Can't bring myself to do it. So we might as well get our collective interests piqued further with our tale from Sam Spade.
Oh,
it is entitled The Queen Bee Caper.
With an air date of July 10, 1949. How about that?
By transcription. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men and women and children too.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, where have you been?
I've been tasting the bitter with the sweet at Miss Wigginson's School for Girls, sort of a special course in homicidal apiculture.
Apiculture?
Mm-hmm.
There were apes involved?
Effie, where is your Latin? Apis, apianus, of or pertaining to bees?
Oh, bees, of course. It was a bee caper?
It was a beekeeper caper.
Oh, that's funny, sir. That's the honey.
Effie, put these words down in your little book. Honey, sweetness, hives, combs, etc. Never mention them again.
What?
Keep things humming, sweetheart, and I'll be right down to drone my way through my report on the queen bee caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. You know, during the summer, when you spend so much of your time out of doors, it's important to pay special attention to the care of your hair. To keep it right in place, to help keep it from getting dry, use America's favorite hair tonic, Wild Root Cream Oil. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. Use it every day. If you've never tried it, ask for it in the 25-cent Get Acquainted bottle, and ask for it by name. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
To be or not to be, hum.
Effie, really, this jargon, this patois. Don't you think it's about time we spoke like educated people?
You know best, Sam.
Every time I visit one of our institutions of learning, I find out something I didn't know.
Oh, Sam, that's incredulous. Well, you just know everything.
Yeah, I guess I do when you come right down to it. The bee, for instance. Bees are a genus of insects of the Hymenopterous order.
What?
Hymenopterous. Living in society is composed of one queen, or perfect female, a few males, or drones, and an indefinite number of undeveloped females, or neuters, which are the workers.
That's me, I suppose. A neuter.
Well, that's for you to say.
Of course.
And you know what else about the bee?
What, Sam?
Confidentially, it stings. Date, July 10th, 1949... to Miss Elizabeth Colley, Miss Wigginson School for Girls, Seacliff Drive, San Francisco. I wonder about girls sometimes. And that's bad, Effie. Bad.
Oh.
From Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Subject, the Queen Bee Caper. Dear Miss Colley. I was singing a medley of sorority drinking songs as I opened the wrought iron gate, walked up the garden path, past those cast iron deer, and presented myself at the big brass bell pull beside that massive paneled door that stands guard between the outside world and your sheltered inmates. A little housemaid wearing dimity let me in and led me to your office. I sat on your chintz-covered sofa and looked at your drapes with their thriving beehive motif and waited for you with my back half turned to the open door. Yeah, hello, how are you?
All right, girls, break it up now. Go on, haven't you ever seen a man before? Come along now, you'll be late for physical ed. Go on, quick.
Miss Cowley?
No, I'm not Miss Cowley.
Oh, no, of course not. No, I was just hoping.
You're Mr. Spade, aren't you? Laurie Thomas, I'm Miss Cowley's assistant.
Nice day, yes.
Mm-hmm. Don't bother to move. I'll lean over you. Put this report on her desk.
Oh, sure.
Miss Collie will be here in just a minute.
Oh, thanks. It's so warm in here.
Next time, wear a mailman's uniform and a 50-year-old stoop. You'll find the temperature is exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, yes, ma'am.
See that you do, then. Oh, Glory, there seems to have been a misplacement of some of the hottie. Would you check on it, please?
Oh, surely. Nice to meet you, Mrs. Spade.
I'm Elizabeth Cowley. You may sit down.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Spade, I'll be painfully frank with you. A thief is at large in my school.
Oh? Well, you probably have a good answer, but I'll ask it anyway. Why not call in the police?
I have a good answer, Mr. Spade. My girls come from San Francisco's finest and wealthiest families.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Wigginson's has had an untarnished reputation for more than three generations.
I'm sure.
As headmistress, I must handle this matter with the utmost discretion. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I already know the thief. Are there any questions?
Well, only one timid one. Who is it?
I regret to say a faculty member is to blame. Glory Thomas. She was in here a minute or two ago.
Oh, really? Well, why, Miss Thomas, you find any of the loot stashed away in her room?
Well, no. No, not exactly. I haven't recovered any of the stolen articles, but I'm sure Glory's responsible. I'm certain she's the thief.
You're just sure?
I thought perhaps you might establish definite proof against Glory.
You mean you want me to frame her?
Oh, no, Mr. Spade, you misunderstand me.
I don't think so, Miss Colley.
Oh, dear. I was afraid this would happen. I told Ursula. But then I...
All right, I'll ask. Who's Ursula?
Mr. Spade, I think I can trust you. It was Ursula who instructed me to call you. Ursula Cavanaugh. You know the name.
The Ursula Cavanaugh, inherited all the real estate, lives in Cavanaugh Towers penthouse, hasn't set foot out of there in 20 years?
Yes. Mrs. Cavanaugh is our school's benefactress. She is, of course, on the board of trustees. She is, moreover, a dear personal friend.
Oh, I see.
Oh, yes. We were classmates together here many years ago. Ursula's quite unlike myself. Married well, though a widow now. Rather aggressive. Frankly, she wishes to have Glory Thomas discharged. But her connection with the dismissal must not be known. Now, I don't suppose I can ask you to take the assignment now.
I'm a detective, Miss Carley, not a frame-up artist. I had to have my name called up in the lobby, and then two elevator trips later, I faced her on her penthouse terrace. Ursula Cavanaugh looked like a 1910 stock company lead out of Charlie's Aunt, smoking a black Italian stogie and gripping a cane like a shillelagh. Two men were on the receiving end of her black snake whip of a tongue. A youngish guy, stockbroker type, and an individual in a morning coat who looked practically nude without a butterfly net.
Oh, you're a fool and a nincompoop, Jelinek. I lost all patience with you ages ago. Not only are you incompetent, but you're also dishonest. Don't mind telling you that when the board of directors meets on Thursday, I intend to instruct them...
Really,
to have...
Miss Cavanaugh, I've tried not to discommode you in any way. I endeavor in every detail to fulfill my responsibilities as manager of this...
Don't
hotel.
Interrupt me.
Auntie, I think you've got Jelinek and me all wrong. Now, the truth is,
Gerald, you're both a pair of thieving scoundrels. Now, get out, Jelinek, before your weasel face ruins my digestion.
Very well, madam. I remain at your service.
No backbone, no spunk. And as for you, my dear nephew...
I think I'll toddle along, Addie. I ought to get back to the office.
Control your little impulses, Gerald. I admire a little larceny in any man, but not at my expense.
I was beginning to think I'd become invisible in that rarefied penthouse atmosphere. She hadn't even blinked at me while Jelinek slunk back to the lobby and Gerald toddled along to his office. The terrace was a riot of bloom. I don't know much about flowers, but she must have had them all there. Off to one side, a little man in a blue smock putted around a wooden structure on a stand. I'd become aware of bees humming amidst the flowers when she finally spoke to me.
You're Tom Spade, aren't you?
Sam, ma'am, the fun-loving Spade.
Picked your photograph out of the other detectives. Looked like you got spunk. Why'd you come here?
Curiosity. I met Glory Thomas out at Miss Wigginson's. I liked her. I wanted to see the type that would strong arm her out of a job from a safe distance.
Spunky. Come over here, Mr. Spade. I want to show you something. Piggott.
Yes, ma'am.
That'll do for now. Work at the other end of the garden for the time being.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Piggott, my gardener and beekeeper. Most taciturn individual. You know what this is?
Well, I didn't, but now I can see it's a beehive.
Yes, my own beehive. Fresh honey from a tea and fruitcake every afternoon.
Fine old tradition.
Observe this hive, young man. Honeybees are the most intelligent of all insects, surpassing even the ants. And why? Because one female controls a community of many, many thousands.
I am against it.
Yes, Mr. Spade. The queen bee reigns supreme. The males are drones, quite useless. The female workers perform all necessary labor. No waste motion. No dissension.
Well, some of my best friends are drones, and I just can't stand them.
I think you understand me, Mr. Spade. I wish Gloria Thomas removed from San Francisco for an excellent reason. My nephew, Gerald Long, the young man who just left here, has developed absurd romantic notions about her.
Yeah, so you want the romance busted up. But if you try to break it up openly, your nephew might get stubborn and even marry her. On the other hand, by framing her as a thief, you ward off the affair until you can figure out some other dirty trick.
I knew you'd understand me, Mr. Spade. I admire bluntness in moderation. Well, what do you say to joining forces with me?
Just one thing, Mrs. Cavanaugh. Nuts. Next morning, I put through a call to Nickinson School for Girls. It had been my intent to talk to you, Miss Carley, to tell you I'd left my hat in your office, but somehow I found myself talking to Glory Thomas. And somehow our talk resulted in a cocktail date at the 10 o'clock Scholar Bar and Lounge.
I shouldn't have come, of course.
Oh, exam papers to grade, no doubt?
Stacks and stacks.
Soft velvet-type hands. Well, what's this on them?
Stains. I teach our girls chemistry, among other things.
How about me taking on a night school class for the other things?
You're crazy. You don't need any education.
Well, I can always use a postgraduate course.
You're really crazy, Sam. I needed this.
We'll make a night of it.
Maybe.
Gerald won't object, huh?
What's that mean? Who have you been talking to, that hateful old woman?
Mrs. Cavanaugh wants to put the boots to you, Glory. She called me in to frame you.
I could kill her.
Oh, easy now, Gloria.
Don't talk to me. I thought I could take it. I thought I could be patient and wait while Jerry ironed everything out. But not now, though. I hate that selfish, domineering old woman. I hate her nephew, and I hate you.
Well, that'll do to start with, honey. Now let's go down my list. I hate...
Don't let me go. I've had all I can take for one night.
Wait a minute, Gloria. I was... Hey, you forgot your bag. Hey! She disappeared around the corner as I came out into the street. It was starting to rain. As I stepped off the curb, I slipped and turned my ankle. As I limped onto Montgomery Street, I saw her disappearing into one of the tall buildings on my side of the street. It could have been the Cavanaugh Towers. I step and a half into the lobby thereof a few minutes later. As I came in, Jelinek, the manager, was getting off the elevator. He swatted himself several times in the neck and then went into a door marked private. No trace of Glory in the lobby. I looked in the bar. She wasn't there, but Albert Piggott, the beekeeper, was having a stinger.
Oop. Now I'm beginning to feel good. Hey, who's this? I know that. Why, it's Mr. Spade. Sit down, Mr.
I don't have Spade. Time just now, Mr. Piggott. Tell
well,
me,
sit down, you... sit down.
Oh,
sit down.
Oh, easy, easy.
I'm fired. Have you heard? I'm fired. Just a worker out of work. Turned out by the queen bee.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Piggott. I imagine Mrs. Cavanaugh wasn't too easy to work for.
I told her to keep away from the bees when I wasn't there. Well, she's gone and disobeyed me. One of the workers must have stung her. She's got a temper, you know. Ooh, my. Must have smashed the eye with her stick. Bees were all over. And then she fired me.
When was this and why did she fire you?
Oh, about old... Now, maybe half an hour ago, I knocked, and then there wasn't any answer, and then I let myself in. It was all dark. I couldn't even see her. Heard the bees, of course, but couldn't... Oh, sorry. And I said, Mrs. Cavanaugh, you disobeyed me. And in this voice, this awful voice, she said, Mr. Piggott, you're fired. Get out. This awful voice from the dark. And Mr. Piggott, mind you, never before just Piggott this and Piggott that. And then, hey, where are you going? Hey!
I didn't bother to stop at the desk to get myself announced. I took the passenger elevator and operated the penthouse elevator myself. No hands. Nobody answered my ring. The door was unlocked. I went inside. Crossed through the empty apartment to the terrace. The rain had just stopped and the sunset cut a sudden shaft. First I heard it, the humming of swarming bees. Then I saw the overturned beehive. Then I saw Ursula Cavanaugh sprawled back in her chair, her stick and Italian stogie on the floor, while the bees clustered greedily over the fruitcake and honey set out on the table. I wondered if those most intelligent of all insects had the answer to Shakespeare's question, O death, where is thy sting?
Makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. Now, here's important news on good grooming. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. Remember, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. It grooms the hair naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. So if you want your hair to be more attractive than ever before, get the generous new 25-cent size of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's leading hair tonic, on sale at all drug and toilet goods counters. It's also available in larger economy bottles and the handy new tube. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil, too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. Get Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too.
I want to know what kind of shampoo the dumb girls wear.
Guess what else other ingredients aside from lanolin are in Wild Root cream tonic whatever stuff? Guess.
Cream oil, yes.
Beeswax.
Really?
Really?
Well,
yes. I went to go see if Wild Root was still a viable product. It is. It's available on Amazon and other places. But it says includes mineral oil, lanolin, and beeswax. Amazing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so if you don't buy it, then it's none of your beeswax, right?
Exactly. It's not your beeswax.
Okay,
it's
I'm sorry I interrupted you for that, Dale.
No, that was worth it. I was just curious if either of you had ever had any interesting or scary experiences involving bees.
Not bees. Never.
You never been stung?
I think, yes. I do recall that you're a kid. You're like 7 to 12 years old, and at some point you go stupidly wandering into the backyard with no shoes on, and you step in clovers or clover something, and you step on a bee. And the bee says, oh, yeah, don't step on me. Boom. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple. One was when we were at my grandparents' farm. My brother got stung on his head by a yellow jacket, which is not real good. But the fact is he covered it with his hand instead of letting it fly away. So got him more than once.
So stung him, his hand.
There was a time when we were at day camp and we were playing Capture the Counselor. And we're running through the woods, and I saw the counselor. So we started running straight through to where the counselor was, and there was a ground beehive in between us and the counselor, which I found.
My very first sting was from a bumblebee, oddly. And oddly, it was at a very young age, like 4. I caught it with my hands like a dummy, and it stung me on the pinky. Mm-hmm. But I never got an irrational fear of bees. A fear enough to be respectful. I've gotten it by a honeybee maybe once. Wasps, one of every flavor, just about.
Yeah.
The rotten creatures. I had a cousin who was mowing the lawn in the backyard at her house, and there was one of those underground nests, and she did get swarmed. Fortunately, she was not allergic in any way, but I mean, she got nailed all over from those bees. So her dad took care of that. He went down. He went at night, poured some gasoline down the hole, and down goes the match. Wham! Hello, caller. Welcome to Erie House Radio.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing well.
Who's this?
This is Josh. I was recently diagnosed with being phobia-phobic.
You have a fear of being afraid?
I know, man. It's detrimental.
I see.
Welcome
to the show.
Then you fit right in.
I know. Yeah, no. I hopped into the black hole, and then I also created a black hole. Yes.
Okay,
gotta be careful
with right
black hedge. Those black holes. You never know where you come out with those black holes.
Never know.
In the world of antimatter, I think.
If only we were smart enough to understand that crap. Anyway, how are you gentlemen doing?
Doing well.
It's okay until we hear bells.
Ding-a-ling.
How many zingers do you guys have?
Stick around and count.
There's lots of them.
You got a hoot out of it.
I think you need new batteries, Gar.
Did you guys put a plastic on that one? Is that what you guys did?
Did we do
plastic
what?
Plastic on what?
A plastic on the noisemaker.
No, I think his battery's
me.
Low.
and in just a minute, toast will be ready.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Oh,
yes.
There it goes.
See, there it is. See, he has a
fire. Please just do me a favor and not tell me where that toast is popping out of.
Yeah, that's sweet.
It's just that he keeps a smoke detector above his toaster so that when it goes off, he knows his toast is ready.
Yeah, the question begs, where wouldn't toast come out of? I don't know.
A beehive.
A beehive.
I have a short list of places I hope it doesn't come out of.
Josh, are you enjoying our radio program tonight? The Sam Spade, the Queen Bee Caper.
Absolutely.
And what do you like about it the most?
Mostly my commentary for now, but yeah, go on with your stuff.
Oh, okay.
We got to hit part two of the Queen Bee Caper. We'll be back after the exciting conclusion.
And now back to the Queen Bee Caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Miss Wigginson, Miss Carly speaking.
Sam Spade.
Oh yes. You shouldn't have gone to see Mrs. Cavanaugh.
I didn't make any promises, ma'am.
Ursula was quite upset by your visit. Called me after you left her. Quite angry about it, Mr. Spade.
Oh?
She wanted to see me today. Our weekly half-day holiday, you know. But I simply couldn't face her. I'm sorry if I sound... I finally managed to doze off after everyone left for the afternoon. Have you called before?
No, this is the first time. I'm at Mrs. Cavanaugh's place right now.
Indeed. Does Ursula wish to talk to me?
She can't.
I beg your pardon?
It might be a good idea if you'd come over here, Miss Carly. Mrs. Cavanaugh's dead.
What was that?
Mrs. Cavanaugh's dead. And since you're her oldest and closest friend...
Yes, Mrs. Spade. I'll come immediately.
Well, you came on over, Miss Carly, but meanwhile, nephew Gerald Long arrived, also Piggott, whom I called down at the bar and who sobered up with remarkable rapidity on hearing the news. Gerald was shaken up by his great aunt's demise. We waited for the family doctor to arrive and watched Piggott entice the bees back into the hive. You turned up soon after and tried to soothe Gerald's nerves. The hotel manager, Jelinek, also flooded in. The doctor diagnosed cause of death as shock from formic acid. The secretion bees inject into the bloodstream with their stingers. We all stood around thinking our various thoughts as the doc voiced this verdict. Piggott was the one who voiced an epitaph.
She really knew nothing about bees, you know. The queen bee was all important, she thought. But there's always a rebel in every hive. The queen bee is always deposed sooner or later. The worker bees go on and on. But the queen bee... can't reign forever.
After that, we all left and went our various ways. Poor old Piggott shouldn't have said that, and he must have been a lot drunker than he seemed, because he was found next morning in his garden in Marin County beside his overturned beehive, a victim like his late employer of fatal bee stings.
That'll make you a fool if you think you'll get away with this.
Don't threaten me, Mr. Long. I've been bullied long enough. I don't intend to lose my position here now Mrs. Cavanaugh's gone. I've taken all I could stand from her, and I don't intend to let you walk all over me.
I'll do whatever I think needs to be done, Jelinek. Well, if you're trying to insinuate
I
that I have
I can cause you as much trouble as you cause me. Maybe more. With what I found out about you now,
get out of
I
here.
Can...
Go on, beat it before I break... How did you get in here, Spade?
Door was open.
Well, if you're here to collect any kind of bill, I want to know what services you rendered.
Nothing's rendered yet. But I figured you might like to know that Aunt Ursula was murdered.
Murdered? You can't say that. Not my hotel.
Shut up, Jelinek. You need proof to back that up, Spade.
I've got it. Piggott.
What? Piggott's dead.
How do you know?
His doctor just called me.
Yeah. Well, that's why I know your aunt was murdered. I've just been out to Marin. I had quite a session with that doctor.
Well, where's your proof, man? Who'd want to kill her?
Well, Oh, stop it. Practically everybody who knew her.
Really, now, I must protest this disrespect to the members of the...
Shut up. Go on, Spade, go on. Start getting specific.
Well, specifically, Piggott's doctor, because of what I suggested, examined the dead man again, found the mark of a hypodermic. plus the fact that a concentrated solution of formic acid killed Piggott. Piggott's next-door neighbor said he'd been stung as often as 10 and 12 times a day. That meant he'd built up a certain immunization to bee sting.
Are you suggesting that someone murdered him with an injection of commercial formic acid?
I thought I'd made that fairly clear.
And what would the motive be?
To keep him from talking about his employer's murder.
I see. Well, is that all?
Yeah, except that his neighbor told me somebody answering your description called on him this afternoon.
Mike? Oh. Well, yes, but Spade, look here. I can explain
Allow
that.
Allow me. Hello.
Gerald, hello, darling. I'll be due in about an hour. Just got to check supplies in the chem lab, and then I'll be home and show you what a cook I am. You better be brave.
I'm sorry. Just a second. Here's Gerald. For you, Gerald. Your wife.
Oh. Hold on a second, honey. Spade, look here. Now, you can't drag her into this thing.
When'd you get married?
Yesterday afternoon.
Husband and wife. No testifying, huh? Well, I don't think I'll need your testimony. Jelinek's face fell 4 inches into his ascot tie as he heard himself lose exclusive hush money rights to the above information. Pausing only to enjoy a hearty laugh at his discomfiture, I went on to my next and final port of call, Miss Wigginson's School for Girls. This time, there was no girlish tittering as I entered, Miss Collie. No dewy young Amazons clutching hockey sticks in their grubby little hands. For a very good reason, as you told me.
My girls are dismissed for the day, Mr. Spade. Because of poor Ursula, of course. Really disrupts our routine. First our weekly half-day holiday yesterday, and now today.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to Miss Thomas in the chemistry lab she is, I think.
Very well. I'll take you to her. She knows nothing of our first meeting.
I've talked to her.
Oh, well, in here.
Yes? Oh, what do you want?
Thought we might talk.
There's nothing to talk about.
Well, we could talk about this hypodermic needle.
Put that down. I'm using it for an experiment.
Or, how about a formula, HCOOH or CH2O2?
What? That's formic acid.
Mm-hmm. Miss Collie, you said yesterday was a half-day holiday. Did Miss Thomas stay here in school?
Why, no. She rarely does on Wednesday afternoon.
That's why Mrs. Cavanaugh had a visitor, didn't she, Glory?
Did she?
After you ran away from me.
All right. I did go up to see her. I was so mad about what you told me. I intended to hand in my resignation and give her a piece of my mind, and I but she was dead when I got there.
Oh, Glory, no.
And I just got panic-stricken and ran.
Yeah, murder's a pretty scary thing.
Murder? What do you mean, Mr. Spade?
Mrs. Cavanaugh died from a hypodose of formic acid. Somebody familiar with chemistry would use that method.
Then that could mean...
Mm-hmm. The acid could be made up in this lab. The hypodermic could be this one here.
I didn't kill her. I didn't.
You say you were scared. You were so scared you ran all the way to City Hall and married her nephew.
So you found out?
Jellyneck found out first. He intended to squeal the old lady, but she was dead when he got back. He knew her will disinherited Gerald if he married without her auntie's approval while she was still alive.
We married after she was dead. But that didn't matter. After I saw you, I told Jerry if he was any sort of man, he'd marry me, will or no will. He did.
And yet this morning, he drove over to Marin County to see old Piggott.
You think he was trying to shield me? I tell you, she was dead when I got into that room. I don't know anything about Piggott.
One moment. I believe I recall that Mr. Piggott said Ursula spoke to him when she discharged him. Glory, you must be mistaken about the time you entered that room. She couldn't have already been dead because...
Yes, she could have and was. The killer was almost caught by Piggott. She hid behind the curtain in the dark and spoke to him. Miss Cavanaugh was already dead, but...
I see. Mr. Piggott thought it was Ursula's voice, but it was yours, Glory.
No, it was yours, Miss Collie.
What?
You committed both murders. You had access to the murder weapon. You had the half-day holiday to do it in.
Mr. Spade...
Even at that moment, the finishing school schoolmarm had to say, Mr. Piggott.
Well, I'm not sorry for it. Ursula misused her power shamefully.
And now the queen bee's deposed again.
Oh, you're brighter than most men, Mr. Spade. You, too, understood the significance of Mr. Piggott's remarks last night.
Yeah, I could have been a little brighter a little sooner. You helped give yourself away when you asked me if I'd called you earlier yesterday afternoon.
Why, Sam? How could she?
Well, Kavanaugh bullied her since childhood. Then you came on the staff and your ability scared her. The queen bee being deposed and whatnot. When Kavanaugh wanted you framed, she saw a chance to get rid of both of you. She hoped her murder would look like an accident, but if it was recognized as murder, you'd be the logical suspect.
Oh, you're much too clever, Mr. Spade. Let's get it over with.
Yeah, let's. It's up to those drones at Homicide from here on in. Period and a report.
Sam?
Yes, Evie?
How come Gerald went out to see Mr. Piggott?
Well, Gerald didn't care about the will, but he didn't want to boot a fortune out the window either. Glory hadn't told him she'd seen his aunt, so he called on Piggott to find out when Piggott last saw Auntie alive. Go type that up. I am completely well, and when you return, we shall Indian wrestle.
Certainly, Sam.
And now, listen to this. Shopping notes. Tonight or tomorrow, get a family-sized bottle or handy tube of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's favorite hair tonic.
I don't know, Gar. I kind of like that. I kind of like that, Andy.
Like I said.
Indian wrestling.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess that was wrong on a few levels by today's standards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that'd be an H.
That was the old leg wrestling, right? The Indian wrestle?
I've heard different versions. I've heard of two people. It's almost like sumo, except you're both in a circle and you try to push the other one out of it. I've heard different versions of it.
I was familiar with the leg wrestle one, but
our caller is still here. Aren't you?
Oh.
Yeah, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
Doing fine.
Your name is Josh, right?
Yes, absolutely. No, that actually sounded very much like Fallout 4, and it sounded like the Silver Shroud, and I appreciate everything that you just introduced. That was hilarious.
That closing line would have been a direct...
That was fair. That was so fair.
Would have been a direct line into the HR department. Anyway,
if you like snappy one-liners, Josh, we have a tradition here after each and every episode. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Following the logic that only an artist should frame someone, only a killer should kill someone.
Yeah, side splitter.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. You guys are crazy people.
I didn't know you needed permission for that, Gar. But, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm right here with you.
Permission for what?
For killing.
To frame someone or to kill someone, yeah.
Oh, no, I said following a logic that only an artist should frame someone, only a killer should kill someone. So you have to permission, but yeah.
I didn't know that before, but I now know that you're doing the 1950s voice on radio on purpose. Okay, now that I know that, go on.
And besides that,
we are definitely men ahead of our time. Then
does it sound like I'm talking on old talk radio? Anyway, yeah. No, I get it.
Yes,
it's a way to go. It's a way to go. We got two more tales, and since Gar was ready for some Johnny Dollar, I think we should go there next with a story called The Be or Not to Be Matter.
Yep, with the double E's.
Yeah.
Is this like one of those, what was that show from the 70s? Like the quantum physics thing, like the quantum realm?
No, this is Johnny Dollar. He's an insurance investigator with an action-packed account.
Expense account.
Expense account, yes. Yeah.
And then he's going to fail miserably when he chooses a bad decision. And then he learns that he was...
Johnny Dollar, that's my brother-in-law.
No, that's somebody else.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Johnny Dollar never fails. He never fails.
No, yes. He's a winner.
He gets his butt kicked once in a while, but he does.
Does he wear a chief suit?
No.
No, remember, he has a faction-packed expense account. He can charge whatever he wants.
He's dressed very dapperly.
This guy is duping crypto. This guy is duping cryptocurrency. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, from 1961.
More like
he's loaded with
pennies.
This stuff.
This was a while ago.
I have to tell you, Dale, this show, this very show, the Johnny Dollar, came out on my very first birthday. That was my birthday present. They did Johnny Dollar that night.
Ah. And therefore, our original broadcast date is?
Broadcast date of October 29, 1961.
Happy birthday!
Johnny Dollar.
Pat Fuller, Johnny, Universal Adjustment Bureau.
Oh, hi, Pat. Pat Fuller, did you say?
That's right.
Well, how come?
What?
Well, Pat McCracken's always been my contact over there at your place, 5 or 6 years now.
Haven't you heard? Pat's retired.
Retired?
Yeah.
At his age? Well, he's only about,
50 on the nose. Been here since he was 25. So now he's off and gone with a real nice pension from the company.
Son of a gun. Well, I always did know I was in the wrong end of this business.
You want a job as a company man? Come on over. Who knows? Maybe you can live long enough to earn a nice soft pension, too. If that is, you'll do the same thing he did that I'm doing.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, instead of keeping your own hours, traveling around all over the country all the time, new places, new faces, lots of excitement, well, you'd have to be tied down to a desk 9 to 5, day after day, month after month, year after year.
Yeah.
But think of the advantages. You have Christmas off and New Year's and the 4th of July.
Well, now, let's...
And all sorts of free life and health insurance and other benefits. A couple of weeks off with pay every year.
Let's forget it, Pat. I think I'll stay freelance and free.
Whatever you say, Johnny. Anyhow, with McCracken gone, I've taken over.
Well, what's on your mind? And I hope it's something that'll get me really away for a change.
Don't ask for it. Before this thing's over, you may find yourself having to cover the whole country from stem to stern.
Well, it sounds intriguing. What is this thing?
One of the oldest and simplest rackets that ever hit the insurance business, but one of the hardest to catch up with.
Tell me all.
Why don't you come on over here? I will.
All right, I'm on my way.
The CBS Radio Network brings you Mandel Kramer in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the be or not to be matter. Expense account item 1, $1.20 for a cab to Universal Adjustment Bureau down on the square. Pat Fuller was about 40, I'd say, and in spite of his easy, casual manner, it was obvious he didn't miss a trick. Very much like his predecessor, Pat McCracken.
Wow, glad to see you, Johnny.
How are you, Pat?
Oh, fine. Sit down. Let me tell you all about it.
Okay.
Cigarette?
Thanks.
Now, as you know, Johnny, here at Universal Adjustment, we handle claims for a list of insurance companies as long as you're armed.
I know.
And all over the country, every state in the union.
Uh-huh.
But only the sizable claims. The little ones for a few hundred, a few thousand dollars, well, it's cheaper for the companies to handle them, to pay them off themselves.
Sure.
However, they're all required to inform us about them, even if they involve only pennies.
I see.
But unless there's something unusual about those small settlement reports, they're simply glanced at and then filed away.
Well, now I take it you've run across something unusual.
I sure have. You see them here? 13 reports and claims paid out by 13 different companies. The smallest for $250. The largest, thanks to an impulsive darn fool hotel manager, is for over $4,000.
You said for one of the oldest rackets in the business.
False injury.
Ah.
Like the one I busted out on the coast a while back with some old wino was carefully run down, his leg broken, then the insurance split with him.
Something like that. These reported injuries were all the results of falls.
Sounds like the hotel or department store caper, then.
It is. Hotel.
Yeah.
Couple goes to a nice hotel, registers just for one night. The man carefully explains to the clerk that they have important business in some other town the following day.
Sure.
Just before checkup time, they casually walk across the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And she suddenly trips on the edge of a rug or slips on the polished floor, lets out a yell of pain.
Well, I know the rest. He yells for the manager, hauls her up to the room. By the time the manager gets there, she's putting on the agony act, and they threaten to sue the pants off the hotel and raise a big stink.
Right. They usually demand around $100,000. Threaten to call in some local lawyer they just happen to know.
Yes.
And the manager, all excited and hoping to avoid a lot of adverse publicity, as well as a lawsuit, has them sign a release. Pays them something in cash, whatever they can talk them into, and they're on their merry way.
Pat, why don't these hotel managers ever learn to hold on to people like that and make them undergo a medical examination?
Oh, this pair is clever, Johnny. In more ways than one.
How do you mean?
Well, the woman usually slips on a spot of oil or grease. Who's to prove that they put it there themselves? After all, nobody's watching them every second, simply because nobody knows who they are and what they're up to.
Yeah, I see what you mean. But Pat...
Also, Johnny, in every one of these cases, some doctor's been called in, made a quick examination, and confirmed the fact that there was an injury.
And insisted that they stay around for a while?
No. Like I said, they've already established the fact that they have to be in some other city on business. Thousands of dollars at stake. That if they're made to stick around, then they'll really sue.
Yeah. 13 in a row, you say?
All over the country, and all within less than 4 months.
Doggone it, Pat. If there really is an injury in each case, at least enough to fool a doctor.
That's puzzled me, too.
Well, it doesn't sound like the same couple then, does it?
But it is. I'm sure of it now.
Why?
Well, Johnny, you know as well as I do that most crooks develop a sort of pattern, whether they themselves realize it or not.
Well, you know that some of them set a pattern deliberately, you know, leave a regular trademark just to show off.
Right.
Or just to make the cops look silly.
Exactly.
Now, they haven't used the same names each time.
Oh, no, of course not. But what they have done...
Now, what about their descriptions? Is it covered in these reports?
Oh, yes. But they don't mean very much, because one time she's a blonde, the next time a brunette, and then a redhead, you know. And the same thing goes for him. Thick glasses one time, a mustache another, clean shaven the next, and so on.
Yeah.
But look, here. I have a picture of them.
Oh? How'd you get this?
Photographer in a hotel lobby in Chicago, taking pictures of a model, showing off some clothes. They happen to be in the background.
Uh-huh.
See? There they are.
Yeah. Oh, fine. This will be of help. Even if they fool around with a disguise or two. But now to get back to this pattern that you mentioned.
Really the show-off element, as you call it.
Yeah.
The home address they give when they register.
Fictitious one?
I don't know, but it's always the same.
What is it?
21st Street and Fairmount Avenue.
Where?
Philadelphia, PA.
Mm. Well, if it isn't fictitious, it might give us... 21st and Fairmount?
Yes.
In Philadelphia?
That's right.
Oh, great.
What?
That's something to work on, all right. Pat, this case may be tougher than you think. Could even be dangerous.
Oh?
That is, if that address ever really was his. The man.
Why, Johnny? What is it?
A not too exclusive little place known as Eastern Penitentiary.
Four cars left out at night or in unheated garages. Don't ask for trouble. Ask for to fight.
Winter time is trouble time for many of us who leave our cars out at night or in unheated garages. So don't ask for trouble. Ask for DuPont Xerox Antifreeze. Xerox outlasts winter. It protects your car against sudden drops in temperature all winter long. It won't boil away even during a warm spell. And Xerox has an exclusive rust inhibitor, MR8. That protects all engine metals, including aluminum, against rust and corrosion. So, for safe, dependable protection, do as millions of motorists have done for over 20 years. Ask for Xerox Antifreeze. It's made by DuPont. Remember,
four cars left out at night or in unheated garages. Don't ask the trouble. Ask for DuPont Xerox Antifreeze.
Thank you.
You could spend a lot of time and money sending a copy of this picture to every hotel in the country together with a warning to look out for this couple.
But do you know how many hotels?
But it probably wouldn't mean a thing.
Because of the way they change their appearance somewhat each time.
Mm-hmm. And because they're pros and they're smart, they'd get wind of the fact that they're being looked for and duck undercover, maybe even try some other caper until the heat died down. After all, if they're clever enough to stand a doctor's examination. Because I still don't get that part of it.
I don't either.
Anyhow, to really nail them down, it looks to me like they'll have to be caught in the act.
But how can you possibly know where they'll operate next with this fake injury racket?
Now, you said they've been all over the country.
Look for yourself. Boston, Philadelphia, Houston, Albuquerque, Chicago, Miami, Portland, Oregon, Portland, Maine, Portland, Indiana.
They seem to like that name.
Part of a pattern?
Who knows? Go ahead.
Seattle, Wichita, Kansas City, and Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I'll be darned if I can see any pattern.
That's a pretty smart to move around so much.
It'd be a lot easier to figure the next move if they covered one area, even one state at a time. Yeah, there might be a chance of finding some plan in their movements, but there was only a relationship between these cities. There's even some alphabetical order. Something to latch on to.
A pattern?
Yeah, some pattern aside from their method of operation. And, of course, that ridiculous address. A state penitentiary yet.
Maybe there is.
What?
It's only a wild hunch, but sometimes those are the ones that pay off.
What are you thinking of?
Can I borrow this picture of them?
Sure.
And a list of the towns they've hit so far?
Of course.
I take it there's no question about my being on expense account.
Well, of course you are.
All right.
Where are you going, Johnny? What are you going to do?
You think they'd like to see me in the state pen? Expense account item 2. 2410 for a cab to Bradley Field, a plane to the City of Brotherly Love, and then the cab to 21st Street and Fairmont Avenue Eastern Penitentiary. One of the assistant wardens was all cooperation, and after studying his records for a few minutes, he came up with some highly valuable information.
Yes, Mr. Dollar, it's Harry Bain, all right. There's no question of it.
Harry Bain,
He finished out his term for burglary only a little over a year ago.
Burglary?
Yeah, and I must confess, I'm not at all surprised that he's operating again. Also, I'm not surprised that he's changed his type of operation.
Why do you say that, Wood?
He's a very clever criminal. If for no other reason than that he was able to escape conviction for so long. He had an arrest record a mile long, you know?
No, I didn't know.
Yes, all over the country. Chicago to Houston to Seattle to Miami, all over.
I see.
But they could never convict him. Because always before he'd pull a job, he'd enlist the services of some local mouthpiece.
Go on.
Yeah, he'd have an alibi rigged before he made a move. It was only by actually catching him in the act with the goods in his possession that they were able to nail him down here in Pennsylvania.
In other words, what you're saying to me is that I'd better catch him and that female partner, catch him in the act.
Yes. But are you sure that he and his partner pulled all these fake injury jobs?
You're thinking of a doctor's opinion each time that there really was some injury to the woman. A really sprained ankle or a busted knee or whatever.
Yeah, of course. After all, recovery from something like that some 13 times in only 4 months.
I know. It bugs me, too.
Unless you can definitely prove there's no actual injury after one of her falls, and regardless of a doctor's opinion, mind you. In other words, Mr. Dollar...
In other words, Warden, the first thing I have to do is find out where they're going to pull their little stunt next and be there when they do.
Yes.
All right, then. Maybe that's where you can help me.
How?
You have a list of all the cities where this Harry Bain operated... Before you got him?
Yeah, I did. Boston, Houston, Portland...
All right, now, wait just 1 minute now. Just let me check your list against this list of mine. All right, now, go ahead.
Okay. Boston, Houston, Portland, Oregon...
Check.
Portland, Maine...
Right.
Portland, Indiana...
Right.
Miami...
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Yeah, all right, go ahead.
New Orleans.
Oh.
Chicago, Seattle, Wichita, Minneapolis, Albuquerque, Little Rock, Duluth.
Yeah.
Kansas City, and here in Philadelphia.
Good. Then there is a pattern.
A what, Mr. Dollar?
You gave me the same 13 cities that I have on my list. All of them places where he already had a contact... with a crooked lawyer from his burglary days.
Oh.
Also, you gave me 3 new ones. New Orleans, Little Rock, and Duluth. Towns that he hasn't hit yet with this new racket.
but I'm betting that he will hit them.
New Orleans, Little Rock, and Duluth.
Right. And if I can be there when he tries it...
Excuse me. Yes?
Is Mr. Johnny Dollar there, Warden?
Yes, he is. Just a minute. This is for you, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, thanks. Johnny Dollar.
Pat Fuller, Johnny. They've done it again.
Where?
Little Rock, Arkansas.
Good.
Good.
Sure is, Pat. I'm on my way.
What? Where to?
Well, take your choice. New Orleans or Duluth, Minnesota.
What?
The most effective aid to needy families abroad is given each year through the religious organizations of America. They are so efficient that a single dollar will send more than 300 pounds of food to feed hungry mouths in lands overseas. But our religious groups go much further. Besides food, they send clothing, medicine, and bedding. They help support hospitals and clinics and develop self-help projects. Keep faith with those in need abroad. Give through your faith.
Got a whole lot of radio left. That was part one only of Johnny Dollar.
That was the long part, though.
Yep. It was, well, but we got Gregory Hood coming up, too. Don't forget.
Yes.
Yep, Gregory Hood.
I did some digging on Mandel Kramer, who is the voice actor for Johnny Dollar in this one. And on looking this up, I found out, and it has an odd tie to my childhood, for 20 years, he played Police Chief Bill Marceau in The Edge of Night, which was a soap opera in the afternoons. And he played it from 1959 and 1979. I saw this cat every afternoon because I wasn't tied to a chair or anything, but I had a babysitter that would watch this garbage. And we had to sit there and say, okay, you kids, shut up. I'm watching my stories.
Yep. That was back when there was like one TV in the house and everybody had...
Yes. Yes. And I went digging it up and it was on, it was on the CBS network affiliate during that time, 1955.
So, Gar, how is it that you needed a babysitter for 20 years?
I had a lot of money. I said he played the police chief for 20 years. I didn't say I was being. But during that time where he was in that role in the 19, I'm guessing like 19, well, 64 to 69, somewhere in there. I would have been stuck at a babysitter's. I would have been between 64 to 69. So I would have been like 6 years old or something like that. I don't know.
That would have been real bad for me to have a babysitter that long.
Well, no, I don't think I had her that long. Not the 20 years. And not
some
the
kind
years,
of law
maybe
is
like,
broken.
Yeah, no.
Yep,
that's
true, yeah.
Maybe she was the babysitter for like 2 years. I don't know. I was like 5 or 6 years old. And she would sit there and, oh, I remember it. So the Edge of Night and going, oh, God, please. There's got to be something on. There was nothing.
First 2 years and then the other 18 years are nobody's business. All right.
There you go.
We got
to. So anyway,
up.
Ties to Edge of Night for Mandel Kramer.
Who is our Johnny Dollar tonight in the be or not to be matter, which we will complete right now. We'll be back.
Item 3. 2 1/4 for a cab to the Bellevue Stratford. And there I ran up item 4. $181.40 in phone calls to the manager of every sizable hotel in both Duluth and New Orleans. I've got a list from one of the big hotel associations that was only too glad to help. Item 5, $61 even for all the books, magazines, and papers I could read and for plenty of room service. I didn't even go out for meals. After 3 days of it, I just about had my fill of doing nothing but reading, eating, and sleeping, but then... Johnny Dollar.
This is Monsieur Jacques Devereaux at the Hotel de Philippe in New Orleans, Monsieur Dollar.
Yes.
I promised to call you if anyone from up there in Pennsylvania happened to register here in our splendid hotel.
Yes.
We now have with us a couple by the name of Chatsworth. Monsieur and Madame Henry Chatsworth.
Oh, so it's Chatsworth now.
But they're such lovely people.
From here in Philadelphia?
Yes, but they're such lovely people.
And they gave 21st and Fairmont as their address here?
Yes, they did. But they're such lovely people, Monsieur Dollar.
Now, listen.
I just refuse to believe they're those horrid rascals that you telephoned
about. Now, you just hang on to them. I'll grab the first plane I can.
Hang on to them?
What?
But they're only staying overnight.
I know.
Monsieur Chatsworth has to go north on business tomorrow.
That's what he thinks. Item 6, $4 for a cab. Item 7, $81.45 plane fare. But the only flight I could get didn't leave until the wee small hours of the morning, so it wasn't until after breakfast that we finally pulled in New Orleans. Item 8, another $4 for a cab to the Hotel de Philippe. And there, the prissy little manager suddenly became a real problem.
And I tell you, Monsieur Dollar, that I simply refuse to believe that nice Monsieur and Madame Chatsworth are those horrible crooks you mentioned. Why, they're lovely people.
Mr. Lenderow,
what's more, you're only a private investigator. You have no real...
I know that only too well, Mr.
And for that reason alone, sir, I must refuse you admittance to this.
Would you please listen?
If you wish to call in the police, have them station their men about heaven.
A bunch of police swarming all over this place? This Harry Dane, who calls himself Chatsworth, would smell them a mile away. He and the Dame Whittle would simply take a powder.
At least that would save my hotel from any embarrassing situation, which is all I care about.
Sure, and would let them scot-free again.
And I simply refuse to believe they're such lovely
people. You said that.
And I meant it too, sir. Now, if that's all, Monsieur Dollar.
Oh. All right, Mr. Devereaux. You almost make me wish they would knock you over.
I have told you.
You simply refuse to believe.
Yes. Now, must I order you off the premises?
You mind if I stop at your bar long enough for a drink? I think I need one.
Not at all. But I shall be watching you.
Oh, I'm sure you shall.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Chatsworth, Madame Chatsworth.
What?
Oh, you're up early this morning.
I ducked behind a pillar and listened.
Oh, yes, monsieur. We plan to have breakfast.
I could catch only snatches of their conversation.
That you can't.
And I just prayed that Devereaux wouldn't tip them off.
Well, we'd like to stay, Mr. Devereaux, but we've got to leave for New York. Big business deal up there, and if me and the missus aren't there right on time to sign some papers, it could cost us a fortune. I mean, really big money.
Yeah, so we're all packed, and we'll be leaving right after breakfast.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but of course I understand.
Sure, I knew you would. Well, come along, dear.
Yes, Henry. Oh, my, am I hungry.
Now, Monsieur Dollar. Monsieur Dollar.
While the manager looked for me in the bar, I ducked across to the other side of the lobby, grabbed the bellboy, and shoved a five spot into his hot little hand.
But for what, sir?
Mr. and Mrs. Chatsworth, the number of their suite.
Well, it's 214, but may I ask
you
why... Good.
Now, where can you and I have a little talk, all alone? But even a 10 spot wouldn't persuade him to part with his uniform for the rest of the morning, so, I'm afraid I had to use other tactics, though I made sure he was comfortable in the linen closet where I tied him up, gagged, and missed him. Then, grabbing a handful of towels, I ran up the back stairs to the second floor where, thanks to the borrowed bellhop's uniform, it was a pretty sad fit. A chambermaid let me into 214. The Chatsworth luggage was packed all right. They were all ready for takeoff. But I had to find some clue as to how they passed a medico's examination after one of the so-called accidents. So I carefully went through the bags one at a time. Now, what did I find? You'd never believe it. It was nothing more or less than... I heard a key in the door, so I slipped into the bedroom and under a bed.
Oh, Henry, this is killing me. Killing me.
Yeah, I know it, honey. And boy, you get that manager up here and a doctor, too. You hear me?
Okay, now, where is it? We gotta act fast.
Here in your suitcase, Henry.
Good. Now, pull down your stocking.
What?
What's the matter?
I thought I'd lock that suitcase.
Well, never mind that. Don't worry about it now. Here. You ready?
As ready as I ever am, I guess. I just wish it didn't hurt.
You ought to be used to it by now. Well, now here we go.
Ouch. Oh, darn it.
If it didn't hurt a little, you wouldn't sound legit. Oh, now that ought to do it. Now go in the bathroom, slap on some iodine to hide the marks they made, then lie down on the bed.
Yeah, okay, Henry.
Hey, you see how good it's taken already? It looked like the worst sprained ankle that manager ever saw.
Clever? It was sheer genius. And when the manager brought a doctor and they put on an act that should have won an Oscar, just one look by that doctor and he was completely sold. But when he suggested to Bain, alias Chatsworth, that she stay around for hospital care...
Why, you old fool, didn't you hear what I said? If she isn't in New York with me by tonight on that business deal, it could cost us $1 million. So if you make her stay here, I'll sue you, too. The way I'm going to sue this hotel for that slippery floor down there in the lobby.
Please, Mr. Chatsworth, not so loud.
You know what's good for you, Sawbones? You'll give her something to ease the pain so we can catch our plane. Then you'll get out of here.
Please, Doctor, you better...
And as for you, Mr. Devereaux...
Yes, sir.
Well, I've heard plenty about cases like this, about you hotel guys being so careless with slippery floors. And I'm going to sue you for $50,000.
Please, Mr. Chatsworth.
Okay. Okay, you've been nice to us, so I'll make it $10,000 or
$15,000. Oh, no.
You know a lawyer by the name of Frankie Tobello?
That crook.
What if he is? All I care is he gets me $10,000 for this.
Mr. Chatsworth.
Yeah?
Perhaps the injury isn't as bad as it looks. And if we pay the doctor's bill and, $200 or $300...
What? You're out of your mind?
But I don't want a lawsuit or the publicity. And I'm only trying $1,000, perhaps, in cash, immediately.
Now, listen. I've got you over a barrel and you know it. So you're going to pay for this and plenty. Now make me a decent offer.
And the price they settled on? $2,000. Cash, immediately. But as Devereaux, the poor excited sucker, was about to go downstairs and get it, I crawled out from my uncomfortable spot under the bed. And you know something? Surprise, Henry Bain and the woman gave up without a struggle when they found out who I was and what I was doing there. And the manager, when I pulled the little glass jar out of their suitcase and showed him how they made their phony accident look so real. Real enough to fool the doctor. Oh, believe it or not, the shock was so much for him, he almost fainted. So, that was that. And the expense account total comes to $471. Oh, wait a minute, I forgot to tell you about the trick. Their little trick for making that ankle swell up and look like the worst sprain on record. You see, that jar, the one that Bain had opened and then clapped against her ankle, contained exactly 3 nasty little yellow jackets. Bees. Yes. Clever. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, one of the nicest killers I've ever met. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar is written by Jack Johnstone, produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr., music supervision by Ethel Huber. Johnny Dollar is played by Mandel Kramer. Also featured in our cast were John Thomas as Pat Fuller, Ivor Francis as the hotel manager, Robert Dryden as Harry Bain, alias Chatsworth, Gertrude Warner as Mrs. Chatsworth, and Bob Donnelly as the assistant warden. Be sure to join us next week, same time, same station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Art Hanna speaking.
Well, he's no Bob Bailey, but I'll take Mandel Kramer. He did a fine job with Johnny Dollar.
I agree.
And with that happy thought swimming around our skulls, Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's moral of the story. Come on. Here we go.
You can't cover your tracks if you keep giving out your address.
We lost Joshua along the way. Dave, you're still with us, right?
Dave? Oh, Dave. Blah, blah.
We could be temporarily Daveless.
Oh, no.
Which is a horrible,
gonna fill us,
horrible condition.
Who's going to fill us in on all the stuff that we got to talk about?
I do want to talk about something.
Okay.
Coolest guy ever. Fogsbane, okay?
Yes.
Now, not
yes.
Who, believe it or not, this week came to my rescue, and he didn't even know it.
Wow.
All that
okay.
cool stuff he sent us of late, the little mini TV and the soundbite player and such, came in handy. As you may or may not know, I work from home. And by the way, want to welcome any of my workmates who may be listening. There could be more than two or three of them. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening. So my laptop, one of the USB ports, took a vacation,
Digger.
Let us say.
Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Took a dump and moved on. So I'm I can't work without all the USB ports. Yeah, see, he had a USB spreader.
He came to my
rescue.
Four port. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I actually have, I have a small, I can't think of the word.
Is it something you can say on radio that's small?
No, that's not. I can say it on radio if I can figure out what the word is. I have a whole bunch of these USB extender, four-port and three-port extenders. I have them for all the stuff I've got. And they're just amazing. They really are. Because I've got a plethora of peripheral USB hard drives, and there's only so many ports on the computer, but with those little extenders, it helps a lot.
Yeah, you can do a lot more, absolutely, and I am extremely grateful on many, many, many levels, Sir Fogsbane, without question, our favorite listener. Not that you're not all our favorites. Good old Bob, I hear almost every day. That we are on. GGSI paper. Welcome back. And Chris and Jenny and Janine and some other people, thank you so much for listening. And the folks overseas from Sweden, apparently a bunch of yous. I don't know.
For Fogsbane. I got the box. I did receive the box, Fogsbane, and I did open it. And due to crazy stuff, I'm going through so many aches and pains for computer communication with my internet service provider. I have not had a chance to sit down and play with the goodies, but I do have them. And I did see that four-port switch in there. But
yeah, individual turn your on and off switches there. It's cool.
Now that I didn't. So I'm going to have to go look at that little switch he gave us. I didn't realize it had on-off switches.
Yes.
Let me see, because I got one here, and this is from Insignia.
Get enough.
But it didn't have any on-off buttons on it. So maybe Fogsbane gave us something even better. So that's amazing. For power distribution. There you go. Okay.
Last comment before we get into Gregory Hood here. I just wanted to mention, too, that for somebody as tech-challenged as myself, I find it quite amazing that I got all that stuff to work, Fogsbane. Thank you so much. Those instructions certainly helped. This tech-challenged old geezer here.
for the direction that I go for the horrible horror thing, I am really set up as a communication business here, and I've got duplicates of the technical devices that if something goes bad, I can rip a computer apart, change something out, and keep going. It's good to have that in your back pocket.
Yep. It's getting to replace the guys who used to work on their own cars. Gar, we got to get moving. We got a whole lot of radio left. We'll,
Yep.
We'll find out if Dave slipped on a banana peel or what. But this one's called Adventure of the Beeswax Candle from the casebook of Gregory Hood. And its original broadcast date is
June 24, 1946.
So they say.
Petri Wine brings you The Casebook of Gregory Hood. Tonight, the Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to the adventure of The Beeswax Candle, another exciting story from The Casebook of Gregory Hood. I hope you're sitting back in a comfortable chair after a good dinner. Did you try my suggestion to start that dinner with a glass of Petri California Sherry? Petri Sherry is the best beginning a good meal ever has. When you pour yourself a glass of that Petri Sherry, just look at the color. A beautiful deep amber. Then hold that glass of Petri Sherry up to the light. Notice how clear Petri Sherry is. Just as clear as crystal. That, you know, is one sure sign of a good sherry. But only when you put that glass to your lips do you really know how good Petri Sherry is. It has a flavor that comes right from the heart of luscious, sun-ripened grapes. Oh, and say, if you like your sherry dry, you know, not sweet, Petri makes a fine dry sherry. It's called Petri Pale Dry. If you don't know which you prefer, the regular or the dry, why not try both? Don't buy one, buy two. But just be sure you always buy Petri. Well, it's Monday night in San Francisco, and we have a weekly date with Gregory Hood and his friend Sanderson Taylor. Tonight's rendezvous is at one of this city's favorite and most colorful meeting places, the top of the Mark Hopkins Hotel. Let's join them there, shall we?
Harry Bartell, how are you?
Evening, Mr. Taylor. Hello, Gregory.
Hello, Harry. Come sit down. We were just discussing a story. It's really Sandy's story, so I'll let him set the stage for us. Go ahead, Sandy.
Well, Harry, though it's an adventure that happened last January, it's as vivid in my memory as if it had taken place yesterday. It all began one evening when Mary and I were driving home from a party in the Berkeley Hills.
Mary, for your edification, Harry, being what Earl Wilson would refer to as Sandy's BW.
BW?
Beautiful wife.
I get it. Go on, Sandy.
We were driving the Packard convertible, but even with fog lights, we could barely see the white line in the middle of the road. Everything was a grayish blank. And though it was only a couple of miles from the party to our home, we managed, among the twistings of all those unaccountable streets in the hills, to get completely and utterly lost. I didn't dare drive beyond the pace of a somewhat depressed and anemic snail, and as we crawled along, I prayed that the white line would lead us somewhere from this.
Sandy, this fog's rather exciting, isn't it?
Doesn't make driving exciting, Mary. I can hardly see the white line. I am afraid we're lost, darling.
Like a dream world. The kind of night when anything could happen. A night for adventure.
You sound like Gregory. All I want is home and bed.
Oh, that's nice, too. But tonight I think it's rather gay and romantic to be lost with you in the hills.
After 7 years of marriage, darling, that's very flattering.
Listen to that man playing the clarinet. Isn't it good?
Oh, excellent.
I wonder who lives around here that plays like that. Sounds like a professional.
Darn it, even the streetlights are off. Power failure, I guess.
My, but it's quiet. The sort of night that...
The devil's that?
Somebody's in trouble. Stop the car, Sandy.
But, darling, it's the middle of the night. We can't see your hand in front of us.
Stop the car, Sandy. That sounded like a woman screaming. Come on, Sandy. It came from this direction.
Well, wait for me, Mary. Wait for me, darling. Where are you? Mary! Mary! Mary!
Who is it? What do you want?
I've lost my wife in this fog. I thought she might have come here.
Thank you.
I lost my wife in this fog. She didn't come here, did she?
No, mister. How'd you lose her? I'd like to learn the trick.
Look, I have no time to joke. Do you have a phone?
Nope. Still hoping for one, though.
Well, how about the house next door?
Mrs. McIntosh lives there. She's got a phone.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Why, you poor man. Of course you can use my telephone. It's over there.
Oh, thank you so much, Mrs. McIntosh.
This is no night for a young girl to be running around by herself. You had a quarrel, of course.
No, we didn't, Mrs. McIntosh.
Oh, of course you did. I know how these things happen. When I was a young thing, I used to be mighty headstrong myself. Oh,
but I assure you... police headquarters, please. Mrs. McIntosh, we heard a scream as we were crawling along. I stopped the car.
Police
and...
headquarters, Lieutenant King speaking.
Oh, this is Sanderson Taylor. I'm up in the Berkeley Hills, and my wife just jumped out of my car and disappeared in this fog.
What happened, Mr. Taylor? Did you have a spat?
No, we didn't, Lieutenant. As we were driving along, we heard a scream. I stopped the car, my wife jumped out, and just disappeared.
Okay, I'll be over in a patrol car. Oh, where are you?
Just a moment. What's the address here, please?
114 Ogden Drive.
114 Ogden Drive.
I'll make it as fast as I can in this fog.
I'll be waiting for you.
And now I'll make you a nice, strong cup of tea. And then you can tell me what you quarreled about.
Mr. Taylor, we've been in every house on this street, and there's no trace of your wife.
But, Lieutenant King, she can't just have disappeared.
Well, looks as if she has. You're sure you didn't have a row with her and she hopped out on you?
How many times do I have to tell you that we didn't have a row?
Okay, okay. Look, Mr. Taylor, it's nearly 4 in the morning. I suggest you drive to your home. The fog's lifting a little now.
Oh, but Lieutenant...
If your wife does get near a phone, she'll be bound to call you or
us. Yes, but
us.
If we...
Now, just take it easy, Mr. Taylor. I'll bet she'll turn up before morning.
Good morning. Gregory Hood, Importers.
This is Sanderson Taylor.
Hello, Mr. Taylor.
Is Mr. Hood there?
He just left.
Oh, Lord, I've been calling him all night. Do you know where he went?
Yes, Mr. Taylor. He's down at the dock supervising the unloading of a cargo. Oh,
do you know the name of the boat or the pier number?
I don't know the name of the boat, but I think he said pier number 16.
Pier 16. Okay, if he should call you, tell him I'm driving over there right away.
That's what happened, Gregory. I couldn't find any trace of her.
Gosh, Sandy, I wish I'd been home. I flew my plane down to Del Monte last night. Came back early this morning.
Oh, I must have called you 40 times during the night. I've been absolutely frantic.
I have a hunch she's all right, Sandy, but let's step ashore and get to a phone. I've got an idea. Oh, Lundborg.
Yes, Mr. Hood?
You take over the unloading.
Okay, Mr. Hood.
Be very careful with that Peruvian consignment. I've got a special client lined up for those Inca headdresses.
Right you are, Mr. Hood.
All right. Now, come on, Sandy. Now, let me get this quite straight. You checked at all the houses near where Mary got out of the car?
Yes, as far as we know. As I told the police, though, it was hard to spot the exact area. We were completely lost in that darn fog.
Then your only real clue as to your location was that guy who was playing the clarinet just before you heard the scream.
Yes.
You say he was a good player?
Oh, top notch. I remember that Mary said he sounded like a professional.
Then that's our only lead, huh? Oh, here's a phone booth. Do you have a nickel, Sandy?
Sure. Who are you calling?
Harry James is at the St. Francis. He may be able to help us.
Oh, you mean he might know who the clarinetist is?
Sure. If he's really good, Harry will know him. Mr. Harry James, please.
Oh, it's a slim chance, Gregory.
True, true, but it's worth trying. Oh, Harry, this is Greg Hood. I know I must sound like the crack of dawn. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm in a jam. Perhaps you can help me. Well, my best friend's wife disappeared in a fog in the Berkeley Hills last night. The last time she was seen, somebody was playing a mighty sweet clarinet quite nearby. I thought you might know if there are any really good clarinet players living in Berkeley. You do? Yes, I will. Name of Bill Cooper, huh? You have his address, Harry.
We're in luck, Sandy.
Oh, he knows a clarinet player in Berkeley.
Yes, he's looking up his address.
Oh, yes, Harry? His address is 109 Marden Way. Much obliged to you, Harry. Yes, I'll call you later. We might have dinner together. So long, and thanks a lot.
You have your car here, Sandy?
Sure.
Good. Then let's head out across the bridge and pay a visit to Bill Cooper, the sweet clarinet player. His house, all right. Does it strike a responsive chord, Sandy?
Well, it's hard to say in the daytime, but this street leads off Ogden Drive, and that's where I ended up last night in the fog. Mm.
I hope that Bill Cooper can help us.
So do I.
Yeah?
I heard your sweet clarinet, and I just couldn't resist dropping by.
Huh. You a musician?
I play around with the piano a little, in an amateur way.
Well, come in.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Cooper.
My name's Gregory Hood, and this is my friend Sanderson Taylor.
All right, Taylor.
Oh, I see you have a piano in here. Maybe we could try a little jam session sometime.
Yeah, maybe.
Are you a professional, Mr. Cooper?
Oh, no. It's just my hobby. I'm a teacher of judo.
That's an interesting combination.
You bet it is. Judo's great stuff, you know. Gives you a feeling of power.
Ooh. Look, Bill, I hope you can help me. Last night, around 12:30, my wife and I were driving near here. We heard you playing the clarinet.
Yeah, that's right. I was playing at that time.
And suddenly, we heard a weird scream. My wife jumped out of the car to investigate, and I haven't seen her since. I'm absolutely frantic.
Yeah, that's tough, sir. What can I do to help you?
Well, did you hear that scream, Bill? You'd stopped playing a few seconds before.
About 12:30, you say?
Yeah.
Say, I do remember hearing a kind of squawk. I thought it must be the radio over at the professor's. It certainly came from that direction.
The professor?
Yeah, Professor Meyer. He lives across the street at 112.
Then let's pay him a visit, Sandy. I'm much obliged to you, Bill.
Well, that's okay, Mr. Hood. And when you straighten out on your mix-up there, why, come back and hit that keyboard. We might knock out a couple of hot licks together.
Mr. Gregory Hood, though. I am glad that at last you have come to investigate the house next door.
And why should I investigate it, Professor Meyer?
It's a house of mystery. Strange things happen there. Things I do not understand. Lights and noises. And last night, when I am in bed, I think I hear a scream.
You don't mean the house across the street, do you, Professor, where Bill Cooper, the clarinet player, lives?
No. I mean the house next to me. It's supposed to be empty.
An empty house in this day and age? That's a phenomenon.
I understand in some way it is tied up in a state settlement, Mr. Hood. It cannot be sold until the ownership is decided.
Professor Meyer, why do you say the house is supposed to be empty?
No one lives there, Mr. Hood, but many times I have seen lights and movement there. I do not like it. And one night I think I hear... No, it is impossible.
We'll check with you later, Professor. Come on, Sandy. Right now we'll take a look at an empty house that screams.
House looks deserted, Gregory.
Yes, it does, Sandy.
Front door's locked, huh?
Yes, but the lock's old-fashioned. I think the skeleton key will do the trick.
I suppose I'm condoning a burglary, Gregory.
No, I don't think they'll send us up the river on this one. Ah, open sesame. Come on, Sandy.
Gregory, I'm scared. Supposing Mary...
Take it easy, Sandy. Well, the house is unfurnished, and yet...
Gregory!
What is it?
Footprints in the dust. A woman's footprint.
Leading into the front room. Come on.
Look, lying by the fireplace. It's Mary. Mary, darling.
It's all right, Sandy. She's breathing. She must have been drugged.
I'll run back to Professor Myers and call the police and get them to send an ambulance.
Do that, Sandy, though before you go, I suggest you take a look by the window there.
Great Scott. A bearded man lying on the floor. He's unconscious, too.
Uh-uh. If you look closer, you'll see that he's wearing a knife in the breast pocket. A knife that's in up to the hilt. Sandy, I'm afraid we are now mixed up in murder.
You'll hear the rest of tonight's story from the casebook of Gregory Hood and Good Dinner tell you how to make a good dinner really great. Just serve that good dinner with a good Petri dinner wine. If you're having hamburger steak, chops, stew, in fact, any meat or meat dish, by all means serve it with Petri California Burgundy. Petri Burgundy is a hearty red wine with a marvelous flavor. Now, if you're having fish or chicken, try serving it with Petri California Sauterne. Petri Sauterne is a delicately flavored, subtle white wine. It's just perfect. And whether you serve Petri Burgundy or Petri Sauterne, or both, remember you can serve them proudly, because Petri is the proudest name in the long history of fine wine.
And in the long history, 5.5 years now of Erie House Radio. Really 6 years technically. But 5.5 years of oldie tiny radio.
Did you know how far you have to go to get a glass of Petri wine around here? I'm telling you.
I was wondering what took you so long to get back.
That's a long way back. A long way back.
Yeah. No. Dave, was the Adventures of Sherlock Holmes with Nigel Bruce on in 1946?
Yeah, this actually started as a summer replacement for Sherlock Holmes because it had the same sponsor, it had the same format, it had the same organist. You see, the organist didn't get a vacation. They didn't pay him well enough to have a vacation. But, everything was the same except, and of course, instead of a doctor, he had a lawyer. So, very much off there. They, as much as they wanted it to go, it really didn't click. First, they had Gail Gordon as Gregory Hood, ended up with Elliot Lewis, and neither one really connected with the audience because it went beyond the summer replacement. They just couldn't make it click. The audience just wouldn't tune in.
Probably that dirty audience.
I wonder what was the competition at the time.
I don't know. Could have been the story lady or something. I don't know, but it didn't. Whatever it was, it didn't beat the story lady.
The story lady,
yeah. Sorry, Gregory Hood, you've been bumped by the story lady.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
He probably slit his wrist.
No,
oh, man.
Story
lady, no. I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, that would be.
You know, it was terrible the way that they replaced Gail Gordon, because I guess the guy said, well, you know, the sponsor doesn't like the way that Gail Gordon's doing Gregory Hood. Will you come do it? Well, yeah, sure, I'll be there. And he showed up, and Gail Gordon was there, too. They had never told Gail Gordon. He says, Elliot, are you the guest this week? He says, no, actually, I'm here to take your role, you know, because they all knew each other. He says, oh. Well, he stepped away, and Elliot Lewis ran through the rest of the show. To be honest with you, I really liked it a lot better the way Gail Gordon played it, but neither one caught on, and the rest is radio history.
Radio misery.
Stephen Gale.
That's right.
That's true.
I hear they put out a hit on Story Lady after this went down.
Yeah.
They tried.
Incident in the parking lot, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, if it weren't for Byron Kane, she'd have been a goner.
Yeah. The fact that she had that big, what was that, the Bo Peep hook? You know, but
the sheep hook.
The sheep hook, yeah. That sheep hook, man, it came in handy for more than just corralling sheep. Yeah.
Collies are better.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, they're naturally herders. Yeah, earlier in the we were talking about bee encounters. Here's the sick thing, okay? So the first thing that ever stung me was a bumblebee. My wife, you know she's nature girl, right? She has taught me how to pet bumblebees. They are so soft.
We pet
bumblebees.
Awesome.
Pet bumblebees?
Yeah, you got to wait until late in the season when it starts getting cooler. They get drowsy and far less aggressive.
Right.
So when you see them bumbling around real slowly and it's, maybe in the 60s or even the high 50s and they're still out, you can pet them gently, and they're like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
I'll get you next year.
I,
when it warms up.
I, Yeah, I have to admit, I've never had an urge to pet a bumblebee.
They're so
never.
Fuzzy. They're so fuzzy.
They are. So, let's see.
You can pet bumblebees.
Well, it looks like bumblebees are going to be the ones that are on the ground with their nesting. I could be wrong, but...
That makes sense. They, I've never seen an above-ground nest of bumblebees.
No. Looks like they like abandoned pre-existing cavities. It says mouse burrows, dense vegetation. Yeah, so that's when it's rough. If you let your yard go and it gets a couple feet tall, well, you might be out there trying to mow the grass and get attacked.
Yeah, yep.
Now, see, one misnomer I had about this, Dale, was I didn't know that bumblebees had stingers. But I guess they do.
They do. And like the honeybee, when they sting, it rips it right out of their behind.
Abdomen.
And they're pretty much done. But that portion can keep pumping their bee poison, as it were, into you to make it hurt more. And it's also, I think it has, what do you call, effects to the nervous system, to smaller things.
Right.
Having been stung by bumblebee, honeybee, various kinds of wasps and hornets, the yellow jackets, the thing that was most painful and bothersome to me was I got bit on the back of the hand by a deer fly. And within 2 days,
they take
my hand looked like a catcher's mitt.
Yeah, they take meat. There's a little pluck of skin gone from that. They're nasty.
Very, very painful and debilitating for a while.
I got bit by a dragonfly before.
Didn't know dragonflies bite. That's crazy.
I didn't know that either. I guess anything will if it feels threatened. I know I will.
Well, that's it. You know, if it doesn't realize you're there, or you don't even know it was there, and you move wrong, you know.
Yeah.
It's just a self-defense.
Yeah.
I always thought dragonflies were so cool because they're just so unique looking. They're just really, you know. And I recall being on a water in an inner tube as a young kid, kind of just floating a little bit, and dragonflies all over, and they were just doing whatever they were doing. And it was just cool to be there. It was just like, wow. Prehistoric. They have that feel to them.
Insects just really bug me. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, let's get this bug out of our system. We've barely got enough time to wrap up. Please welcome Gregory Hood with the adventures of the beeswax scandal.
Well, Gregory, again you left me cliffhang. What happened next?
That's an easy one, Harry. Sandy sent the police and an ambulance while I stayed in that deserted house. As soon as the ambulance arrived, we rushed off to the hospital with poor Mary and paced the corridor anxiously while the doctor was examining.
Oh, why the devil doesn't he let me see her, Gregory?
Easy, easy, Sandy. By the way, did the face of that bearded corpse strike a responsive chord in you?
No, I've never seen the fellow before.
I think I know him. The beard threw me at first. It must be recent. But I'm certain he's a refugee named George Renault.
Taylor.
Oh, doctor, is she going to be all right?
Yes, Mr. Taylor, she's going to be all right.
Oh, can I see her?
For a moment, yes. But no longer, she's exhausted.
Mary. Mary, darling.
Oh, hello, Sandy, dear. Hello, Greg.
How do you feel, Mary?
Awful. Rather as if I've been trying to rumble with a hurricane.
Oh, you poor darling.
Oh, don't worry, Sandy, dear. I'm really quite all right. The doctor says I'm suffering from shock, that's all.
What happened, Mary? Last night, I mean.
I don't really know, Greg. I ran down the street, turned the corner, and saw a light in the house. The only one that did have a light. The door was open. I walked in, and suddenly something hit me on the back of the head. And that's all I knew until just now.
Oh, Mary.
Except that squadrons and squadrons of twin-motored butterflies have been buzzing through my brain. Squadrons of them.
She's asleep, Gregory. Thank the Lord she's safe.
Yes, we'll come back later.
Mr. Taylor.
Oh, hello, Lieutenant King. This is Gregory Hood.
Oh, how do you
do? How do you do, Lieutenant?
The doctor tells me your wife will have to stay in the hospital a couple of days.
I guess so. I wish I could take her home right now.
Well, I'm not at all sure you'll be able to do that when she's well, Mr. Taylor.
Hmm? Oh, what are you driving at, Lieutenant?
I may have to book her on suspicion of murder, Mr. Hood.
Suspicion? Oh, Lieutenant, are you crazy?
No, no, but your wife may be. We found her fingerprints on the dagger that was sticking in the dead man's chest.
But the blow on her head, Lieutenant. She was knocked cold by a blow on the back of the head.
That's her story, Mr. Hood. But I just talked to the doctor. He tells me there's absolutely no evidence of her having had a blow on the head at all.
You are back again, my friend, Mr. Cummings.
Thank you, Professor Meyer.
What did you find out at the House of Mystery, Mayor?
Quite a number of things, Professor, including my wife and the corpse.
Your wife and a corpse? I knew it. It is a house of evil.
I also found this book, Professor Meyer. It was lying under Mrs. Taylor's unconscious body. I thought it would interest you.
This is a 16th century book. The House of the Mirror of Malevolence. This confirms my suspicion as to that house next door. This is a book. A book, a grimoire.
What's a grimoire, Professor Meyer?
I think Mr. Hood knows, don't you?
I think so. It's a handbook of black magic. A collection of all the most evil and supposedly potent spells, isn't it?
Correct, my friend. And this book, this Mirror of Malevolence, is one of the most celebrated and horrible of all grimoires. As a scholar, Mr. Hood, I would beg you to give this book to the university library. As a man, I say, burn it.
I can do neither at the moment, Professor. I must study it. Within these worm-eaten covers lies the answer to murder.
It's driving me crazy sitting around the house without Mary being.
I know, I know. Did you call the hospital, Sandy?
Yes, she's fine, but Lieutenant King's still in residence there. We've got to do something, Gregory.
I'm doing my best. While you were driving the children over to your aunt's, I devoured the Mirror of Malevole from cover to cover.
And?
I'm confused, Sandy. This case isn't pleasant. In fact, it's very messy. We're mixed up in black magic. And black magic spells a nasty, vicious, evil mind at work. And it means even worse than that.
Gregory, for Pete's sake, stop strumming on the piano.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry, John.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to yell, Gregory.
I know, Sandy.
What did you mean just now when you said it was vicious and evil and worse than that?
Well, I was thinking what the police might imagine if they realized this was a black magic case. If that scream you heard last night was not a death scream, but some part of the filthy ritual. Supposing Mary wandered in and something happened. Well, Sandy, wouldn't it be possible that she killed him herself?
Gregory, you can't believe that.
I couldn't, but Lieutenant King could, and I wouldn't blame him. What we have to get is a confession.
From whom?
Oh, I know from whom, all right. It's a question of how. If only this darn book would... Sandy, I deserve to be kicked from here to Sacramento.
What are you burbling about?
I've got the answer. It's right here in the book. Let me see. Yes. Here it is. Listen. I'm reading from page 96 of the Mirror of Malevole. How you may make a murderer confess his crime. In a candle of pure beeswax, insert the cuttings of the nails of the dead man. Burn this in the presence of the murderer, and the spirit of the dead man will descend upon him and torment him until he do confess his murder.
Gregory, I'm willing to ride along with you most times, but if you put any faith in that kind of stuff...
Never mind that, Sandy. I think this is going to work. Get your nail clippers. Then we'll go out and find a nice white beeswax candle. And after that, I'm planning on playing a hot duet with Bill Cooper, amateur clarinet player. I think we may smoke out a murderer.
That you came back, Mr. Hood. What do you want to play?
Well, let's ad lib, Bill. We might start from here. It's a little number I whipped up a few weeks ago.
All right.
You all set, Sandy?
Yes, Gregory. I'm all set.
Okay, Bill. Let's see where you can go on from here.
All right.
Smooth, Bill. And very much in the groove.
And now, Gregory?
Yes, Sandy, now. Beeswax candle with George Renault's nail paring stuck down it.
Put it out.
What's the matter, Bill?
Put that candle out.
Grab him, Sandy.
I got him. Put it out.
store me.
Oh, no, Bill. We'll hold you so you can watch the candle burn. It's pretty, isn't it? You feel him now, don't you? The spirit of the murdered man has descended to torment you.
Let me go,
and he'll keep on tormenting you, Bill, as long as that candle burns.
Cut it out!
Until you confess.
Let me alone. Put out the candle!
You killed George Renault, didn't you?
No, I didn't put out the candle!
It's going to burn, Bill. It's going to burn right down.
Please,
come on, Bill. Why not admit it? You and Renault played at black magic, didn't you?
No!
Oh, yes, you did. You admitted before that you had a taste for power. You thought you could get it that way.
I tell you,
and finally,
didn't.
You killed him because nothing could give you more power than human sacrifice.
I didn't kill him, boy. That candle, please.
You did, Bill. And when Mrs. Taylor walked in on the killing, you slugged her with one of those paralyzing blows that are peculiar to judo. It left no mark, and you planned to frame her for the killing.
Please,
you put
her
fingerprints on the dagger.
Oh, that candle.
Will. You're in for it, Bill. You can't escape. George Renault's murdered spirit has returned. It'll never leave you, never, unless you confess. We'll burn candles until you've forgotten what daylight looks like.
Oh, no. Oh, don't. But what I do, blow it, that candle. It's crazy, Blow it out, will you? Then I'll tell you everything.
Mary, darling, how are you feeling?
Oh, still a little woozy, Sandy, dear, but fine. And Gregory?
Yes, dear?
You were wonderful. Lieutenant King tells me that you saved me from a possible murder charge.
I think you understand how it was, Mr. Taylor.
Why should she, Lieutenant? Personally, I think you have a horrid mind.
I'm just a guy who works on facts, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Hood got a nice, clear confession out of Cooper. He keeps saying the dead man tormented him. How'd you do it, Mr. Hood?
By using a 400-year-old book.
But, Gregory, you didn't really believe in that stuff.
Of course not. It's pagan and horrible, but Bill Cooper believed in it. The only way magic ever appears to work is when the victim knows about it and believes
but
it.
What made you think it was Cooper in the first place, Mr. Hood?
For one thing, the fact that he'd been an instructor in judo. That would account for his being able to stun Mary without leaving any physical trace. But the real clincher was the scream last night.
Well, I don't get you, Gregory.
Cooper said he thought it was the professor's radio. But there was a power failure in this area at the time. You told me, Sandy, that all the lights were off.
Well, that's right, they were.
Sure. If Cooper had been in his own house, he'd have been sitting in the dark, and he'd have known darn well that his neighbor's radio wasn't working. He lied flatly, and why should an innocent man do so? Because he was in the deserted house, lit only by candles and improvising on the clarinet. He didn't know about the power failure. But that didn't make a court case, and I had to scare him into a confession.
Gregory, dear, you're a very remarkable man.
Thank you, Mary. You're a very remarkable girl.
I thank you for saving me from the gas chamber.
Oh, think nothing of it, Mary.
But I do. And I make you a promise.
What is it, Mary?
Whenever we have you to dinner from now on, I'll set the table with beeswax candles.
Charming.
Candles without fingernails.
Oh.
And for the main course, Gregory, we'll have twin-motored butterflies.
Greg, that was some story. I didn't know you knew so much about black magic.
I'll let you in on a little secret, Harry. I don't know a thing about it. The only kind of magic I know is what my old father taught me. He did the most wonderful act of sawing a woman in half. But it never works with me.
You mean you couldn't master the trick, Greg?
No, it requires lots of practice.
Oh, and you couldn't find the time?
No, I couldn't find the woman.
Oh, no.
But, Harry, you must know a few pretty good tricks yourself.
No, not one, Greg.
Now, come on, Harry. How is it every time I come to your house, you dish up such marvelous meals and you're no cook?
Ah, Greg, that's because of the Petri wine. Didn't your old father ever tell you what a good dinner wine does for any meal?
It all comes back to me now.
And you know Petri wine is good wine. Why, it's got to be. Look at the long years of skill and experience that goes into its making. The Petri family has been making wine for generations. Winemaking is their heritage. A heritage handed down from father to son, from father to son. So you can see why the Petri business has grown and grown so that today the Petri family are America's largest independent winemakers. Yes, the making of Petri wine is a family affair. And the Petri family has every intention of keeping it just that. So you know the name Petri on a bottle of wine is more than a trademark. It's the personal assurance of the Petri family that Petri wine is and always will be good wine. Well, Gregory, which particular page of the casebook are you turning to for next week's story?
Next week, Harry, I'm going to tell about an odd story that took place in Hollywood some months ago. It concerns a noted columnist, an extremely garrulous press agent, pardon me, and a very dead actress. I call the adventure Murder in Celluloid. See you next Monday, Harry.
You bet, Greg.
And in the meantime, if you hear of any place for rent or sale, will you let me know?
Don't tell me you're looking for a place to live.
No, Harry. It's for a friend of mine, a veteran who just got back. Believe me, this housing shortage is really hitting the returning servicemen hard. And if anybody deserves the breaks, they do. I think it's up to us to do what we can to see that they get first chance at any vacancy. Remember, if you have a vacancy, rent it to a veteran. Good night.
The Casebook of Gregory Hood is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher. Original music composed and played by Dean Fossler. Gail Gordon plays the part of Gregory Hood, and Sanderson Taylor is played by Art Gilmore. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. The Casebook of Gregory Hood comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Bartell saying good night for the Petri family.
Good night already.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Someone who is lost knows exactly where they are. It's the people looking that are lost.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
Love those jelly beanies.
Yes, maybe.
So profound.
Bees are going to be buzzed all weekend, man. With Suspense, Flight of the Bumblebee, and, sounds racy, with The Saint, The Birds and Bees of East Orange. Does that mean Vincent Price returns?
Yes.
Yes, very much so, yes.
And a fun story indeed.
Whole lots of fun.
And thanks to an unmentioned cable company, we may or may not have. Not likely to.
There'll be a vault program never seen before, because when I used to do it live, I didn't repeat anything ever. But now, due to lack of continuity on my cable system, Horrible Horror will be seen as a vault program tomorrow. And Vincent Price is in that. There you go.
Woohoo!
He's everywhere. He's everywhere. The great.
I don't know if I can
Vincent
afford that
Price
as Price.
The Saint.
Oh, and Basil Rathbone's in it too. And he had a birthday or a death or something. Basil. Good old Basil.
He's still deceased. And that's a shame.
And I know. I grew up being hanging out with Basil, you know, all through TV. He was everywhere. It was great.
Him and John Carradine seemed to pop up everywhere.
Yes, yes. And it was fantastic. A1, fantastic.
Indeed it was. Well, Fantastic Radio, followed by, at 8 o'clock, obviously the repeat, never before seen, of Huddle Huddle Starry.
Gar the Gooligan.
The Gooligan, huh?
Yes. No, the ghoul.
The Gooligans. They're funny.
Yeah, I wanted to retract that. And it's Gar the Ghoul, Horrible Heart, yeah. Not to be confused with. Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, thanks for joining us. Thanks for returning GGSI paper. You made it through the whole night along with good old Bob and Fogsbane and a plethora, a veritable plethora of others.
And Joshua.
Whoops.
Wrong one.
Whoops.
Wrong outro group. I keep forgetting.
Yeah, let's try again.
Everywhere throughout the studio.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Never make it.
There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone. Can you dig it?
Very funny, Ben. He's mocking me. And he slammed the door in my face. Nice.
At least he closed the door. He closed the door there.
He slammed
All right, guys,
up.
Thanks so much. I had a lot of fun.
As did we.
Yes, it was. You know, we just keep buzzing along there. So as you rush off to do what you got to do, Gar, we may as well bring in the one and only Jimmy Durante and call it a quick night and be back at it again tomorrow. What do you say, Dale?
All right.
We'll be back.
Take care, guys.
6:30 Eastern. Yep.
Okay. Good night. Blah, blah.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-dink-a-doo. Good night.
Good
night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.